Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is The Week from In the Loop. Well, the first Obama cabinet appointments trickled out this week. Health and Human Services, Attorney General, Commerce, Treasury, now Secretary of State. I guess that's five down, 2,795 to go. A new president needs to make something like 2,800 political appointments. I'm imagining some version of like a political speed dating where it's just kind of, you know, Barack at a card table, you know, hello, tell me a little about yourself. Okay. I'd say Deputy Assistant Undersecretary for Coastal Fisheries Management. Congratulations. Next. 2,800. That is a lot of jobs to fill, but it is nothing next to the 144,000 applications that Obama's transition team got. And that was just in the first 5 days people could apply. Of course, the number of people applying for unemployment right now is the highest in 16 years. In that situation, I suppose you might as well put in an application with the Obama administration. By most accounts, the transition is going well. The Bush administration is being helpful. But on policy, as with people, it looks like we can get ready for an out with the old, in with the new in a pretty big way. Today was the last day that President Bush could issue new federal regulations and actually have them take effect before he leaves office. Anything after this point can be fairly easily undone by the next president. But there are any number of other rule changes in recent years that a President Obama might like to undo. Just to get a taste, we wanted to look into one category. Many of those regulations involve environmental and energy policy. So we asked one of our listeners who follows that area of news closely to check into what might be ripe for reversal. Maria Surma Manca, thanks for coming back to The Week.
Thank you.
So we'll start with the big one that turned everybody's head this week. Bush opened up Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, right, to commercial oil shale development. Could mean a lot of oil, they say. But why would Obama want to get rid of that?
It's still an unproven technology, being able to get oil basically from rocks. An oil shale works where the oil is actually in rocks and you have to superheat these rocks to incredibly high temperatures in order to extract the oil. This process is still being developed. It's not something that's going to be able to fuel our cars in the next 5 or 10 years. And so there is a lot of concern that these developments and this process is very environmentally destructive for a fuel that is still unproven.
But this rule change was put into effect this week before this 60-day limit.
Right.
How easy would it be for President Obama to undo it?
The big point is going to be whether or not there are going to be any leases signed for this type of development. So if there are any contracts signed in the next 60 days before Obama becomes president, the government's obviously going to have to honor those contracts. But if not, it's going to make the Obama administration have more leeway to either repeal the law altogether or frankly ignore it.
Over the Bush administration, they've opened up other areas of the U.S. to drilling. How much do you think President Obama might want to scale that back?
He's definitely said that he wants to repeal the executive order opening up lands in Utah.
It's all about Utah.
Exactly.
Everybody's been picking on Utah.
No, it's a hot spot. But he has said he's very concerned about communities near these drilling areas who have concerns about the environmental impacts and has said that he would work to repeal that order. Again, it goes back to whether or not any contracts are signed for oil and gas development, and that could still happen.
This summer, the president lifted the executive ban on new offshore drilling, and then Congress lifted theirs in September when gas prices were going nuts. Those have been in place for decades before that. Would Obama and the Democrats bring the bans back, you think?
Well, Obama told Florida voters this summer that he would keep in place a moratorium on offshore drilling. At the same time, he's also said that domestic oil production has to be part of a more comprehensive energy plan and that he'd be willing to compromise if offshore drilling were part of a bigger energy plan.
And he said that before the Democrats themselves sort of changed their tune.
Right. Congress, Democrats and Republicans, let this moratorium on offshore drilling expire, which allowed Bush to lift the ban. So now it seems a little unclear whether Obama is necessarily going to lift this or not, but it sounds like he may.
Maybe it depends on gas prices, I suppose, since
right.
The politics of it in the first place seemed so dependent on
exactly
whether we were paying $4 a gallon for gas. Mm-hmm. California has these very strict car emission standards that they put in place, and the Bush administration has been fighting those all along the way, even after the administration lost in the Supreme Court. I think there's still some tussle over it. Is it pretty much guaranteed that with Obama, California can force cars to adhere to these strict new standards that they want?
It looks like it. Obama has said that he definitely wants to overturn an EPA ruling that does not allow California to regulate the carbon dioxide coming out of their own cars.
And is that just a matter of a stroke of the pen?
It's a matter of the Environmental Protection Agency head and the Obama administration deciding to overturn that.
Are there things that President Bush did not get into effect that he might have liked to before time ran out?
Well, one of them is related to mining, coal mining specifically. Right now, there's a law that says mining companies cannot dump anything within 100 feet of rivers and streams. He wants to push through a rule that would allow companies to get a waiver if they could prove that, hey, we have to dump in this stream, there's no way around it, allow them a waiver to do that. Environmental groups, of course, are very upset by this rule. And in fact, the governor of Kentucky has even formally objected to that proposal. So that looks like that's going to come within this 60-day time frame. And if it does come through, that would be something that Obama could easily reverse.
Maria, thanks very much for coming in. This has been very helpful.
Thank you.
Maria Surma Manca blogs about energy and environmental issues at mariaenergia.com. I am Jeff Horwich, and let's see, some other stuff caught our eye this week. I love this one. While the rest of us kind of float in our water wings and watch pirates take over cruise liners, oil tankers, ships full of Russian weapons, someone kind of surprising actually steamed in and kicked some butt. A warship from India, of all places, shows up and blows away something described as a pirate mothership. Granted, they were under attack. But what a way for India to show the world that it actually has a navy. Who knew? And they must be encouraged by it because reports have them sending another destroyer to the region off the coast of Africa. In Russia today, the lower house of parliament voted by a huge margin to increase the president's term from 4 years to six. It's pretty much seen as a sneak attack to let Vladimir Putin be president again. Here's how this works, I guess. Since technically his previous terms would not have been full terms, I guess the counters kind of set back to zero and potentially he can re-up for another 12 years. Putin says, of course, that is not the plan. But take it from one of the most enthusiastic supporters of this deal, who said, Russia has always been, and now always will be, a monarchy. In beverage-related news, be sure to get your free can of Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper promised that if Guns N' Roses actually released its new album before 2008 was up, everybody in America gets a free soda. Well, the album's out this week. It's called Chinese Democracy. Very clever, or at least it must have seemed very clever 8 years ago when they started working on this thing. I haven't listened to it yet, and I don't think I will. And in another beverage-related news item, you'll be glad to know astronauts are back to drinking their own pee. The urine-to-drinking-water conversion system on the space station was down temporarily, but as of today, astronauts can now safely resume making jokes about the freeze-dried asparagus. Up there on the space station this week, I'm sure you heard about our hometown girl's moment in the spotlight. Astronaut Heidi Marie Stephanishin Piper, who appears to have two names too many, but that's another story, was on a spacewalk doing some repairs when her $100,000 bag of tools went flying off into space. Oops. Well, we have something special for you. We tracked down the unedited tape from Mission Control, and we're going to let you listen in on this now famous moment.
Houston to Spacewalk 1, everything going smoothly up there?
Ah, Roger, Houston. What of you? I'm out over the panel thing, maneuvering my doohickey toward the big metal deal.
Roger, that's Spacewalk 1. Steady as she goes.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna... Oh, man. What the...
Spacewalk 1, report in.
There's like grease all over everything in my bag. I think the grease gun exploded or something. It's... Oh, man, it's on my wrenches. It's all over my sockets. No! Oh, my screwdrivers are soaked!
Okay, Spacewalk 1, perform an inventory of the damaged items.
Oh, it's on the... Oh, not the tri-bracket phase caliper. Gross! How am I supposed to... Oh, crap.
Spacewalk 1, report in.
Yeah, it's nothing really.
Spacewalk 1?
Well... It's really no big deal, but I kind of let the bag go.
Say again, Spacewalk 1.
The bag kind of jumped out of my hand. Just kind of...
What do you mean it jumped out of your hand?
Yeah, it's floating away now. Have I mentioned the view from up here? It's like One Small Step for a Woman from St. Paul.
Spacewalk One, that's coming out of your Christmas astronaut bonus and we're placing you on space toilet detail for the remainder of the mission. Over.
Well, what do you say to that, really? Just got to climb back into the station and nurse a nice tall glass of water. This is The Week. I'm Jeff Horwich. We are online at minnesotapublicradio.org. If you're following the news much these days, I'm sure you're seeing the Democratic Republic of the Congo flash in and out of the headlines. It's a Central African country. There's killing, some kind of rebel group, 250,000 driven from their homes. But after weeks of noticing the story, I still couldn't have told you the cause of it all. So we got in touch with someone steeped in the details. Kambale Musavuli is 27 years old. He came as a refugee from the Congo 10 years ago. Today, he's studying engineering in Greensboro, North Carolina, and he's a blogger with the group Friends of the Congo. Kambale, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your show, Jeff.
Oh, it's our pleasure. You have a rebel leader, Laurent Nkunda is his name, taking on the government in the eastern part of the country. What is it, as you understand it, that he is fighting for?
The pretext that he's stating is that he is there to protect the minority Tutsi in the eastern part of Congo. And he wants to see the Chinese contract to be renegotiated.
So there is the ethnic aspect of this, protecting the Tutsi ethnic group in that part of the country. But yeah, you mentioned China. What is their role here?
China has a deal with the Congo last year, and it's already in motion, where they are receiving cobalt and copper, if I'm not mistaken, in exchange for $9 billion and infrastructures. They are building highways, roads, and high schools and hospitals as well.
So he thinks China is making off with the resources. He wants a piece of it. I suppose he would say the Congolese people should have a piece of it?
No. Even though he's making a statement that this is what he wants, that's not what he wants. He wants to take over the country. He wants to actually destabilize the eastern part of the Congo. You have to see it in a context that is a pretext. When you mentioned earlier the ethnic strife, it's a pretext. The conflict in the Congo is not about minority groups. He wants to have the piece of the pie, and he is also there for the scramble for Congo's mineral resources.
So you don't believe the rebels have the best interests of the Congolese people at heart?
Not at all.
But we should be clear, you don't think the government that's in place is doing a great job for the people either?
The government of the Congo is there to reign, not to govern. The international community invested $500 million to have an election that will legitimize a government to allow access to the resources. So it's not in the political DNA to be able to answer to the call today. They are very inadequate to even pay the military. They are there to reign and they are there to facilitate mining contracts for world corporations to come. And yet the world hasn't come together to stop the conflict, which I think can end with political will. Because if we understand that Laurent Nkunda is a proxy force of Rwanda.
For Rwanda, which is the neighbor to the east, yes?
Correct, correct. And knowing that Rwanda is a U.S. ally, the U.S. is in a very good position to end the worst conflict of our lifetime.
To put pressure on Rwanda, keep
exactly.
the arms and money from flowing there. What's the argument that you make to Americans about how they are related and connected to what's going on in the Congo?
The United States has very close tie with the resources in the Congo. With the Manhattan Project, the uranium used to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki came from the Congo.
Hmm.
The most recent resource that's being exploited is called coltan.
Coltan. Yeah, I think I've heard of it.
It's an ore found in virtually every electronic device, such as cell phone, laptop, DVD players, VCRs, TVs, microwaves. 80% of the world reserve of coltan is found in the Congo.
This is so complicated, the connections with Rwanda, with China, with Angola, we didn't even talk about that. And, of course, all these the multinational corporations that have so much to do with the Congo and the DVD players in our houses. It's no surprise, I suppose, Americans will tend to tune it out with all those messy details. What's the bottom line argument that you make to people here, if they don't have time to wade through all the details of it?
Every 2 days, 9/11 happens in the Congo. We have 45,000 people that die every month. The Congolese have the right to live another day. The blessings of the land that they have shouldn't cause the death. And I refuse the notion of a curse because of the resources. Everyone that I meet, I let them know about my beautiful country because of the potential of the Congo. Congo has the second largest rainforest in the world. It is essential to global warming. Timber is leaving the Congo like crazy, and we wonder why the weather is changing. The Congo has the agricultural capacity to feed the whole population of the world until 2050. People are still hungry today. Potential of the Congo, of a peaceful Congo, has not been explored. I believe people will help if they know that.
Well, Kambale, your passion is certainly clear. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Kambale Musavuli with us from Greensboro, North Carolina. He's the main blogger at friendsofthecongo.org. For American soldiers, intervention in the Congo would seem unlikely, but who knows? With a new commander-in-chief, there will certainly be some new thinking at the top of the U.S. military. You can bet our 1.4 million active-duty military personnel and 25 million veterans take a keen interest. To talk about that and some other things as well, we asked a couple of guys to join us from Superior, Wisconsin. There's a house up there that's owned by Sergeant First Class Troy Smith. That Troy, you share with how many military and veteran folks at this point?
Right now we have 6 of 7 in the house are either veterans or currently serving.
Troy, you yourself, a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, now you're working full-time, so thanks very much for joining us again.
It's a pleasure to be back.
And you brought your younger brother. Why don't you introduce him to us?
TJ is my younger brother and served some time on active duty and is now back in college and serving part-time.
It's no big secret. Military voters traditionally vote Republican. John McCain polled very well among active duty military in the run-up to the election. Do you think Obama has some work to do winning over the military?
The military is a demographic just like any other voting portion of the population. We have our own personal feelings and organizational feelings, but I don't think anybody in the military was definitely afraid of either candidate.
This is TJ. And Jeff, I think that for the vast majority of us, it doesn't matter who the commander-in-chief is. For myself, I enlisted under President Clinton, and then I've served under George Bush, and I'll continue to serve under President Obama. And as a soldier, you know, we're going to get orders, and we're going to do our jobs.
Let's talk about something else that happened this week. There's this new status of forces agreement that the Americans and Iraqi negotiators finally worked out. The Iraqi parliament's going to vote on that on Monday. Some of the general outlines have combat troops moving out of the cities in Iraq by June, out of the country altogether within the next 3 years. Is this a good step, you think?
I think it's a great move. It's a sign that, you know, the tide is being turned in Iraq, and that is the end goal, to give the Iraqis more control.
TJ, you haven't had a tour overseas yet, but I'm wondering, what would be your reaction today if you were to find out that you were going to Iraq or Afghanistan?
I would be immensely excited. I'm looking forward to go. A lot.
Our mother doesn't share that sentiment. I mean,
yeah. Hopefully, mom doesn't listen to this.
TJ, what is it? What is it that makes that exciting rather than something to feel trepidation about?
The way I usually put it to kind of make sense is that it feels like I've tried out for the varsity team, and I only made JV. Here we are. We're at the homecoming game. The boys are out on the field, and they're playing their hearts out, and everybody's cheering them along. And here I am sitting along on the sidelines, and I just want to get my chance to get in the game.
Are the two of you talking much about Iraq these days? Do you talk much about the military engagements that are going on?
Our household, yeah. I mean, with that many veterans in one house, with DirecTV and the military channel and all the cable channels, it comes up daily. We stay tuned to the issues that are going on across the globe because we have friends and family still engaging in this fight. This holiday season is going to be tough for families that don't have their loved one because he or she's away. And we just got to keep that in the forefront of our minds because, honestly, I don't think that the public, you know, for the most part, does.
There are people who have very little contact, other than through the news, with the military. Do you think the people who've got the military sort of in their lives and the people who don't are fundamentally different in some ways?
I say there's some truth to that statement. I think the people who have military influence in their lives, whether it be a loved one, a family, a friend, what happens on your nightly news matters. And I think that they're more prone, or they have more of a vested interest into seeking out the answers of what's really going on.
I guess I would say, yeah, it does become difficult to talk to people with absolutely no connection to the military. And it's definitely been interesting on the college campus. It amazes me at the different opinions that people can have and how passionate about something people can be when they are very, very ill-informed, is the polite way of putting it. And so for me, I aim to educate. Sometimes I get blank stares. Sometimes they look at me like I'm an alien. And sometimes they say, hey, you know, never saw it that way, and I really appreciate you letting me know.
Well, sounds like a good note to end things on. Sergeant First Class Troy Smith and younger brother and Sergeant TJ Smith, thanks very much for talking with me.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Now, before we end, I have to acknowledge our huge Minnesota story of the moment, bigger than the astronaut in the bag. If you're one of our podcast listeners from out of state, it is hard for me to convey to you just how thoroughly our U.S. Senate recount has taken over the news. Coleman or Franken, everybody's talking about it, watching the numbers. A filibuster-proof majority in the U.S. Senate may hang in the balance. Everybody's got recount fever, and if you're a political junkie, well, it's just enough to make you want to get on up and dance.
Recount fever! Have you got it?
Catch it.
Hand counting all the ballots, we can make the winner clear.
Recount fever!
Have you got it?
I've got it.
Please tell me more, this is all I want to hear.
Recount fever!
Have you got it?
Catch it.
Oh, looks like our Franken got himself a second chance.
Recount fever!
Have you got it?
Got it.
When I see those stacks of ballots, makes me want to win my pants.
Well, the canvassing is done. The tally's been reset.
For big election junkies, it's as good as life can get.
Only one can win. Which one is gonna pass the test?
Counting up by hand will tell which guy we hated less.
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
Catch it.
Trying to judge intent of what the voter really thought.
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
Got it.
Just how hard can it be to fill a circle with a dot?
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
Catch it.
If your ballot was rejected, does it get another shot?
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
I got it.
I never thought a Secretary of State could seem so hot.
No one really knows just how long this thing will be.
And meanwhile, both these guys are off in Washington, D.C.
They left behind the lawyers who will fight it out in court.
Yeah, who'd have thought that counting ballots would be such an awesome sport?
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
Coleman.
Well, they didn't mark it, but they wrote it in.
No, they didn't hear.
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
Frank.
There's no mark actually, yeah. in the circle.
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
One less for Franken. Two less for Coleman.
Recount fever.
Have you got it?
Dean Barkley.
Let's set that one aside.
The Week is produced by Sandon Totten and me. We are edited by Kate Smith. Our theme music is by The Smarts at thesmartsband.com. Got some virtuosic acting help this week from Jackie Fuller and Tom Weber. Thanks, guys. Guess what? Our Holiday Story Slam is coming up December 17th. We'll be at the Lab Theater in Minneapolis' Warehouse District. It's beautiful. And our theme this time, thoroughly open to interpretation, Festive Indigestion. We'll have all the details up shortly at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. I'm Jeff Horwich. We'll be back next Friday with a special Thanksgiving week episode of the show. Keep that fever burning.